My name is Elie Margiuli.
This is Dr. Aaron Judkins.
This is Trey Smith.
This is Ryan Peterson.
This is Dr. Jud Burton.
This is Timothy Albrino.
This is Derek Gilbert, and you're listening to The Dig Bible Podcast.
Glad you made it. Come along for the ride as we search for hidden truth, explore historical context, and dig into God's Word to help us understand the past, present, and future of this supernatural world. This is Steve, along with Justin and Ben, and you are listening to The Dig Bible Podcast.
What is going on, all my local guys and gals, and long-distance pals?
We're back.
We're back with Ben!
Yeah.
Yeah. I know, I feel like the last...
Back in the studio.
The last couple times...
we're in person.
That's right.
We've had to say something where we're like, well, no, Ben's out in the woods chasing a Sasquatch or something. We have
the
to always...
The part-timer's not here.
Yeah. I was running them off. This is my territory.
Your scent wasn't doing it anymore,
ain't
huh?
No other Sasquatch pissing on my tree.
That's right. That's my pee tree. You don't pee on my tree. That's where I pee.
So what you guys been up to? I know it's been a while since we've been in person together. We've been doing most of this stuff over the computer. It's just nice to actually see your beautiful faces in person.
We got the garden mostly planted.
That's good.
Chickens on the way.
Oh, boy.
I think the 20th is when they had their hatch date.
Do you have the right month this time?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's this month. It's May. I kind of got a dirty email last time. Yeah. I think I ordered them in February, and they're like, you picked April. I was like, sorry. I wasn't paying attention that much.
Well, don't make it an option if I can't pick that.
Right, yeah. Then it got bumped twice. I'd say they were probably dealing to bigger outfits than me.
Fair enough.
Which is understandable. Not fair, but understandable. Justin's car is out here looking sexy as always.
It's scratched all to pieces.
It still looks good.
That storm. Hey, but July 3rd, whole car is getting repainted.
Ooh.
Thank you, Erie.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Well, who's painting it?
Tusculum Body Repair in Greenville.
I'm going to have to talk to you about price. No, I'm just going to get your...
Yeah.
I'm just going to get your father-in-law.
Ben will be in town shortly.
Yeah, I want him to
moving
to do
down
my stripes and custom wraps and stuff after I get it painted.
Oh, yeah. I tell you what, that guy's got a gift. I tell you, I've seen him do some hand lettering and pinstripes. And
that's what I want done to my truck. Make it look like an old school, like, shop truck.
He's redoing one right now. I'd have to. He'd be mad if I couldn't remember what kind of truck it was. I think it's old GMC.
Do we just need to tell him to not list fast forward?
Yeah, we'll just
fast forward 30 seconds.
Miss this part.
Yeah.
But it's really cool what he's done to that so far. And it actually is the same truck that they had when Liz was a kid.
Oh.
So he went back. He wanted to find it. Even had like this little frog sticker on the side that he's recreated and put back on there and everything. It's just super cool.
That is cool.
So he's bringing back a blast from the past, and it's going to be pretty awesome. But yeah, he'll be down here in the next couple months, which will be awesome.
Looking forward to it.
No doubt.
Put him to work.
Yeah.
Help them on the cost of moving, you know.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Make a little money back. What about you, big boy?
Same old, man. Same old. The farm, tons of work, and trying to fit in research and reading as much as I can in the meantime. So right now, let's think about this. I'm going to throw this out there. Obviously, the dig is... going strong as it always has. Justin's Prometheus lens is growing like horse nettle. I'm going to use a country term there.
Horse nettle.
It's growing like a weed. But that his show is awesome. Make sure you turn in the Prometheus lens. The girls, me and Ben's wife and Leslie from Texas are doing the Mustard Seed podcast, and that's been really good. Going through the women of the Bible. working on some other things that are going to be coming out here in the next couple months, which is going to be really good. You guys need to tune in, subscribe, watch, listen. I guess more listen. You can't watch theirs yet. We got a couple good buddies, Sean and Brian, working on the Vessels podcast, which is really good too. If you haven't listened to that yet, dive into that. That's a really good show. Two guys talking about life and from a biblical point of view and how to deal with things in their life and how they cope with things, you know, with God at the core. Other than that, you know, just we keep on keeping on. Like, I love this. I love doing this. I really wish I could just quit work and just do this full time. This is awesome. I feel like, you know, God's put us here for a purpose. I've never felt like I've had a purpose like this before. Like I'm actually doing what God wants me to do. Cause normally in the past, I always sit there, wonder what the heck was I supposed to be doing with my life? And I you know, go to work, come home to do it all over again. I think I always knew there was something more than that, and look where we are. And this is because of God. So I'm very grateful for it. And I love having that drive. And I see Justin has that drive to the nth power. He makes me look like I'm standing still most of the time.
I just drive vehicles.
And Ben orders Jeep parts.
Yeah, that's my drive when I'm allowed to.
But I encourage you, every one of those shows, please tune in. Please listen. This is stuff that will help you in your walk with God. This is stuff that will help you understand the supernatural. This is stuff that will help you along your path to connect everything that happens in the world around us and bring it back to what this is all about. Like, if it's happening in our world today, there's a way that we can use the Bible to explain these things. We have to look to Scripture to explain what's going on right now. And if you just sitting there saying, well, that's weird, like the UFO phenomenon, or well, that's, you know, politics, and there's something going on here, and there is a biblical thing. There's a biblical stance that we need to have on these issues, and if you don't tune in, you're gonna miss out.
FOMO,
yeah,
fear of missing out. It's a thing.
I've heard that somewhere.
Don't be FOMO'd, guys.
I don't think I've ever been FOMO'd before, but I, all of a sudden now I'm feeling it.
Now you know.
I know. Now I wish I knew. I might have missed out.
Just tune in.
There you go. Well, in all seriousness, tune in. Please tune in. Listen. It's great stuff. It's great material. It's great information. If there's something you want to hear about, if there's something you want us to dig into, please reach out to the website is...
TheDigBiblePodcast.com, and the email address is TheDig423@gmail.com.
Reach out, send us an email, let us know what you want to hear, let us know what you're thinking. If there's something that you see that you know needs to be looked into, that we need to expose from a biblical standpoint,
or
let us know.
If you got a really cool story, testimony, a praise report, a miracle that's happened in your life, or how something really bad came your way and through your faith and God it turned around, supernatural experiences, anything like that you feel like God has put on your heart to share, reach out to us. Our platform is your platform, because we are all batting for the same team here. You may have something that somebody else needs to hear.
That's a true story. That is a true story.
#
True story.
Amen. All right.
All right. Well, Ben,
part-timer,
why don't you give us a prayer, buddy?
All right. Dear Lord, thank you for today. Thank you for this beautiful weather and the rain. Makes things grow. Thank you for our opportunities to come together and do these podcasts. And please, as always, give us discernment. And please have us reach the ones you need us to reach. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Now, I've been looking forward to today. We talked about doing this in the future, but we had a little hiccup in the schedule, so we moved things around a little bit. I don't know if you've ever seen somebody who wants to do a lot of research in a short period of time, because we were trying to move things around, but, you know.
I'm Chris Hart over here, man.
He wasn't ready. I don't even know what that is, but I'm going to go with it. But I'll say there's so much good information on this topic.
Sorry.
Kevin Hart. Okay, that's I know him. I don't know Chris Hart. I thought it was like a wrestler or something. I don't know. Country singer. Who knows?
I'm sure there's somebody named that.
Somewhere. I'm sure. So, yeah. Chris, if you're out there, buddy, we're rooting for you.
Get ready, Chris.
Buckle up. All right. Excited about this topic. Today, we want to look a little bit about the pantheons, about how we see the gods of the other nations, even to this day. And we see where that stuff kind of came from, and we see the similarities and where this all kind of boils back down to. But I think this is really important. Let me paint a picture for you. We have the Genesis 6 event, right? Genesis 6, the fallen angels, the angels come down and they have intercourse with women. They have children who are the giants. And about 8 verses later, the flood has to happen. The Bible gives us very little on that front as far as the overall story. If you've been listening to The Dig, then you know we've been going through the book of Enoch.
And that kissing cousins don't make 30 footers.
They sure don't. They sure don't.
Seth I view, dead on arrival.
100% true. And honestly, today we'll prove that even more. And I think this is really important to understand that any history, not always true, but there's tidbits from everything. Myth and lore always comes from a little bit of truth, and it's taken a little bit further. We have to understand these things come from somewhere. This isn't something that somebody made up in their bedroom one night. This is just
for entertainment value.
There's a reason these things happen. There's a reason that people sacrifice their loved ones to a deity. They didn't do it because they just said, well, that just sounds like a good idea. There's a reason they did these things. So, flood happens. World's wiped out except for 8 people. And they begin to procreate and repopulate the earth.
Repopulating earth, baby.
Through?
Copulation.
So.
There's your $20 word for today.
That's the one. Oh, what'd you say, goodness. You guys? And then look around. All smart. Look around.
George Bush Jr. I'm not a man of many, you know, words.
So you got to remember, after the flood, you have these 8 people. They procreate. We end up having, the world starts to become populated again. However, these people are in a similar area. They're all in the same region. They all speak the same language. They all know the same oral traditions. They all know who Yahweh is. They all know this stuff from Noah. Noah was one that God separated apart. He was Tamim, right? He was pure. He was everything that God wanted to go through that flood. Now, we get through this, and these people start getting a little overzealous and decide they're going to, you know, build a tower up to heaven. Tower of Babel happens. If you haven't listened to our early episodes on these things, the rebellions, we have an episode strictly just on that. Tower of Babel happens. God says, nope, this isn't going to happen anymore, right? So God separates the languages, and respectively, the language groups go their own separate ways, establishing nations throughout the earth. We see the nations of the Akkadians, the Sumerians, the Babylonians, the Assyrians, Canaanites, Israelites, and so many more start to come from this. You know, we look at the 70 nations, right? With the table of nations. Mm-hmm. We see these nations come into existence.
And when you get into Genesis 10, too, it talks about Peleg, or Peleg, however you want to pronounce it. But even his name means, you know, when the lands, the peoples were divided. and there's lots of theories on that was you know, like Walt Brown's hydroplate theory, that it was once one supercontinent and they all busted away and pushed apart. And but I recently heard one that I align myself with, and I think it sounds a lot better, is that after this great cataclysm, a lot of the Earth was in an ice age. And when everybody built their cities, of course, you want to build them right next to the oceans. And when all this ice, when the Earth started warming up, we had this huge meltback, and the water levels rised. And that's why you have so many sunken cities this day. But they theorized that Peleg's time was a division by water, that the waters rised and therefore separated land masses and land bridges, and then also unfroze ice land bridges and stuff. So this was right, all this stuff was right around this time of this Tower of Babel event, within, you know, 1,000 years at least.
Which makes a lot of sense when you look at some South American cultures, and then you look at some Mesopotamian cultures where you have those images of that you could say look like either the Anunnaki or the Apkallu, where you have the something that is the head of a certain animal and the body of a human carrying these little, I'm trying to remember the name of what they were called. I had it written down and I can't remember, but these little
Versace handbags.
They were Versace or Louis Gucci. Vuitton, maybe. Gucci. I don't know.
Yeah.
But they had these little, and there was, it's like a water bucket that they carry. And I can't remember the name of it offhand. Like I said, I had it written down. Maybe I'll edit that in here eventually, but they had these, and you see these almost identical sculptures on different continents, which makes a lot of sense to that. It plays credence to that this happened. Otherwise,
they're on the T-pillars at Göbekli Tepe, and that was the first megalithic site built. It's the oldest site that they found so far. These were supposed to be hunter-gatherers, and this is right there once again in Anatolia, eastern Turkey, a stone's throw away from Mount Ararat, where the boat was said to have landed and re-civilization happened. I found that interesting. Just not that long ago, I was watching a documentary on that, and one of the T-pillars has them. There's like three of them right in a row beside of each other. And I was like, that looks familiar.
So here it is. A drawing bucket, which was called a dalu. That was what they say that they were holding. But the thing is, it's funny that they're using not only the same image, but you have that, and that it's in multiple places. Like you said, it's at Göbekli Tepe. They have that same character basically holding, or similar characters holding that same water bucket, same kind of stance, same look, but they're almost identical. I think there's one that has like the falcon head that you see kind of like, was it Horus from Egypt? But you see this in Mesopotamia and you see this in South America, and it's a very similar image. Like, it's hard to say it's not the same thing.
Yeah, opposite sides of the world.
And so it's pretty amazing that you see this. And there's in Australia, they've found things like this, and they're called Dalu bags. And they think it's a similar, you know, a similar phenomenon, similar thing. So very interesting that you have these connections around the world. So, I think we got to, so we look at the 70 nations. We talked about that, you know, coming out of the Tower of Babel. Now, if we go to Deuteronomy 32, which is kind of where we started this whole podcast, you know, it's the Michael Heiser's, you know, that supernatural worldview, looking at how the world, like understanding the supernatural aspects and how the world came to be how it is. You know, when we look at Ephesians 6:12 and talk about that we're fighting against principalities, we're fighting against, you know, dark forces in the unseen realm. What does that mean? You know what I mean? I think that until I read that, you know, the unseen realm, like we've said before, a million times we've said that probably, but that changed my perspective and my understanding. But when we look at Deuteronomy 32, it says God divided the sons of God to rule over the nations. However, he keeps Israel as his own allotment. The sons of God are referred to in Job as well as being there at the time of creation. So we see these are, you know, these are supernatural beings.
You know, they're referred to as stars too, so they're hand in hand.
They're referred as, I mean, right in this passage, they're referred to as Elohim, you know, the same term that we use for God. Now, Elohim, and we've talked about this before, but Elohim can be singular or it can be a plural word. So Elohim, when we look at the lesser Elohims, these are the lowercase g gods that we talk about. These are the sons of God that he divided among the nations. And we see that in that Deuteronomy 32 aspect. Now, this is where things, and this some of this, and I'm just going to be very honest and upfront, some of this is our theory, and some of this is, you know, we're going to pull and show you the resources and how we got to these ideas and these theories as we go along. But I think it's important to understand that at some point, some of these beings, if not all of these beings, besides Michael, obviously we know Michael was the prince of Israel, it says in Daniel.
And he was the son, and Deuteronomy 32 talks about inheritances.
Mm-hmm.
Who gets inheritances? Sons do.
The sons. So we see the sons of God. We see Michael obviously does not turn away. We hear about Michael. I think Michael's in the Bible four times. That's it. We think. I mean,
and he's
we think,
battling these other princes in the book of Daniel.
Yes.
Is it Daniel 7 or is it 10?
I didn't write down
My
the chapter, instinct, but I know it's
7 or 10.
But it says that we see that. That's what I put down. I said that the prince of Persia and the prince of Grecia from the book of Daniel is there's an angel trying to fight the prince of Persia, and he can't get through to Daniel. So Michael, Israel's prince, comes to his aid to let that angel get through to Daniel.
And 10. Then he,
10. So then he says that when he leaves, he'll have to fight the prince of Grecia again, the prince of Persia again, and the prince of Grecia. So we see these principalities that we're talking about, the princes. And then they go on, and it says straight right there that Michael, that is your prince. I mean, we see this whole principality idea playing out, that there's good and bad. So we see that at least some of these principalities fell away. And we see that in Psalm 82.
89.
Psalm 82.
Oh, okay.
Psalm 82 talks about the divine counsel. It says,
the
in the midst
counsel.
Of gods, he holds judgment. He tells them in verse 6, you are gods, sons of the Most High, all of you. Nevertheless, you shall die and fall like any prince. So we know some of these sons of God that were in Deuteronomy 32 put over the nation or the nations fell away. And we talked about this a little bit before we got on here, but, you know, a lot of times we've talked about this in the past. How did giants or things of this nature show up after the flood? I have a hard time when you look at this and you look at this verbiage not saying that there was a second incursion. We talk about the first incursion being in Genesis 6. But when we see this happen, when we see these things that, and don't worry, we're going to get to a lot more that talk about some of the similarities here. But when you see these things happen post-flood, I think it's hard to deny that there was a second incursion, that some of these sons of God fell. It shows us in Psalm 82. These gods fell. They were going to be judged like men. They were going to die like any prince. At that point, you know, they had already turned away from God. They were the ones that wanted the glory. They were the ones that wanted to be deified by these different
nations.
Yeah,
they knew they were going to jail, so might as well get their money's worth.
Exactly.
At that point.
So, I mean, that once again, this is a little bit, and I said that before, I'm prefacing this. Some of this is theory, but I do believe that we have pretty good evidence seeing this kind of in front of us here.
As I like to say, it's a theory. But in good company.
There you go. Now, you got to remember too, these entities, these sons of God, they could do amazing things as well, right? If we go down and look into the book of Enoch, which we have been studying, we can look at the watchers, we call them fallen angels, watchers. Daniel is the only book in the Bible that actually calls them watchers. But if you look at this, the fallen angels from Enoch, which we've been going over, it talks about what each of them, the main ones, did and what they taught the men. First one being Azazel. He taught the working of metals, the beautifying of the eyelids, precious stones, coloring, and dyes. You have Samjaza, who taught the casting of spells and the cutting of roots. Armoros taught counter spells, which were to take those spells that were cast on you and to remove those. And Barakajel taught astrology. Kokabiel taught the constellations. Ezequiel, the knowledge of the clouds. Eriquiel, the signs of the earth. Shamsiel, the signs of the sun. And Sariel, the course of the moon. Now, I think it's interesting that we see these. This is pre-flood. Remember this. These are the ones that were locked up in Tartarus, according to Peter. And, you know, we hear about this in Jude, you know, the angels that left their first estate, right? They're locked up until the judgment. End of time, till judgment.
And just like me and Justin were reading on the last Enoch study we were doing, I think it's chapter 19, it talks about, Enoch actually talks about these fallen angels being sent to Tartarus. But then as you go on to chapter, I think it's 21, it talks about a different place where they're bound.
Yeah, and we talked about it, and it was like he was identifying two separate sets, like two rebellions here. And I wanted to read
it. Because it described two different things.
Yeah, it says, you know, I went to a different place. So verse 19 in the book of Enoch, it said.
Chapter 19.
Yeah, chapter 19 in the first book of Enoch. And Uriel said to me, here shall stand the angels who have connected themselves with women, and their spirits assuming many different forms are defiling mankind and shall lead them astray into sacrificing to demons as gods. Here shall they stand till the day of great judgment, in which they shall be judged, till they are made an end of. And the women also of the angels who went astray shall become sirens. And I, Enoch, alone saw the vision and the end of all things, and no man shall see as I have seen.
And that describes perfectly the Genesis 6 angels,
yeah,
who fallen and the had first their Enoch. Way with women, yeah.
And then it goes on talking about, you know, as he's traversing and traveling to these other realms and seeing these other things, and he comes to another place. In chapter 21, it says, and I proceeded to where things were chaotic, and I saw there something horrible. I saw neither a heaven above nor a firmly founded earth, but a place chaotic and horrible. And there I saw seven stars of heaven bound together in it, like great mountains and burning fire. And then I said, for what sin are they bound? And on what account have they been cast hither? Then said Uriel, one of the holy angels who was with me and was chief over them, and said, Enoch, why dost thou ask? And why art thou eager for the truth? These are the number of the stars of heaven, which have transgressed the commandment of the Lord, and are bound here till 10,000 years. The time entailed by their sins are consummated. So you have two sets. One's in Tartarus until the day of judgment, and it says they'll be made an end of. Then he goes to this other one. He's like, well, what about these guys? What did they do? Oh, well, they, you know, these are the stars of heaven that transgressed the Lord, and their days will be 10,000 years till their sins are consummated.
Right.
And so we talked about that, you know, could this be the Deuteronomy 32 sons of God?
Right.
That ruled unjustly according to Psalms 82.
Right. And, of course, it's two different occasions, because why would he be seeing the same thing and then ask, what is this, if it's the same
things he saw before?
Right. It's definitely interesting. And like the seven, obviously, you know, we've talked about that before. It could be actual seven or all.
Yeah, and then what I think's fascinating, and we talked about it on that episode, is we have seven planetary spheres. And we know from, you know, the Greek and Romans were hand in hand. They were just the same characteristics. They just named their gods different names. But the Romans aligned their gods with planets. I mean, there was Jupiter instead of Zeus, but they were the same. You know, and there was Mars and Aries. All these different gods, they were connected with these planetary spheres. So I find that fascinating, especially when it transcribes to the Greek. And the Roman, they're the same. Just, you know, same finger puppet, different name. But in both of these religions, you have a divine council.
Yeah, it's always set up like a...
It's an imitation of God's divine council, because it was something that they were a part of before they were threw out of heaven. And this is who that the nations were divided up against in Deuteronomy 32. It was God's divine council. And it's just fascinating. And then when you go into the Greek, when we have the Genesis 6 event, these other set of gods tries to overthrow another set. It's a power struggle. Well, what happens? The losing side, which were the Titans, got thrown in Tartarus and everlasting chains till the end.
That sounds familiar, don't it?
Yes. And that's the Greek Titans. That is the Genesis 6 fallen angel narrative, repackaged and retold from a fallen angel polytheist perspective.
Now, take it one step further. The Savanapkalu. We have that same scenario. If we look at how the Apkalu, they fell out of favor with Anu, right? The chief god. They fell out of favor with him.
For teaching humanity hidden knowledge and wisdom.
This is a bastardization of Genesis 6. It's the same thing. It's the same story repackaged.
Yep.
And you see this same thing happen. And it's just, it's amazing to me when you actually look at these things. And like I said before, these mythologies, these things that we are looking at, this lore, it starts with a truth. And then part of it is, you know, when the Tower of Babel happens, we have this period of time where everybody has a different language and there's no written language. So part of it is the telephone game until written language is established, and it's at different periods of time for each of these different nations. We can trace back this written knowledge, written language to different time periods with each different country or a different nation. And so when we get to that point, though, we see that there is a change where you see that the story, most of it's still there, and then some of it is just, you know, misconstrued. But then on top of that, you have these other pseudo-divine councils that are actual deities. These are the lowercase g gods. I mean, that's the only way I can say it.
Well, God calls them gods.
And he does.
That's what I tell people, and they get so upset when they hear that. They get offended and they get in their feels and don't, you know, it's like they already know the truth and anything else is a lie and a deception from the devil, and they're not going to hear the matter out. Well, we're trying to show you. Psalms 82, what does it say? It says God sits in the council.
Of gods.
Of gods. Say it again, slow for the people in the back. Gods. God himself calls them gods. They are gods. When they come out of Egypt, they get their Ten Commandments, right? Well, what's number one? You will have no other gods before me. If there were no other gods,
then why say
that? And then for those that want to say, oh, he's talking about idols. He's talking about wood and stone. Well, then what about the second one that was right after number one? So you got one, then after one is two. He says, you will make for you no graven image. He is drawing a clear distinction between the two. So that bird does not fly. He's talking about gods. And like you said earlier, why drink the blood of goats? Why drink these hallucinogenic drinks? Sacrifice your children? Go through these rituals for a piece of stone or a piece of wood that gives you nothing in return?
That you made yourself.
Yes.
These people were not idiots. These people saw things. If you look at the Exodus and you see how many times, I mean, they saw a pillar in front of them that was leading them, a pillar of fire leading them through the day to tell them where to go. Like, if you saw that, you're like, what? Like, that's unbelievable. But yet 5 minutes later, they fall away.
Yep.
Like, it's because they saw things, because these other gods of these other nations, God warned against it over and over again. Do not fall in with these gods. Do not fall in with the gods of the Assyrians or the Canaanites or whoever it is. Do not fall in with those gods, because those gods were doing things. They saw these gods do things, just like Moses. And this, if the Bible even shows this happening, if you don't want to take that at face value, the Bible shows it happening with the first three plagues of Egypt. Pharaoh's magicians could do those same things Moses did. He threw down a staff, boom, there's a snake. He wanted frogs to come out of the, or I'm sorry, he wanted the Nile to turn to blood, boom, guess what? They could turn water to blood. They wanted frogs to come out of the Nile, boom, they could make frogs come out of the Nile. After that, they couldn't. And what does Moses say? Forgive my weak use of your power, because it's just what those lowercase g gods could do. It wasn't what the Almighty God, the God, the Almighty, who sits in the presence of the other gods, who is the
true head of the council,
the Father. He is the Father. That these are the sons of God. These are the angelic beings that he put in place to rule these nations, and yet they fell away.
Greek stories, the Titans were the fathers. They were the father gods. The Olympians were the offspring. The younger gods tried to overthrow their fathers and were successful in their twisted
version.
Yeah.
I think it's amazing. And if you, like I said, you have to look at these things. Don't just brush this stuff off. Look at this and look at the similarities. Look at how much of this ties together.
I mean, it's in the Bible for a reason. Why would God have it inscribed in the Bible to have no use at all?
And you mentioned the Apkallu sages. If you go back even further before them, the Akkadians have a very similar story. But with them, you have Enki and Enlil. And they were like the two sides of a coin, heads and tails. Enlil was the domineering, jealous, you know, quote-unquote, mean god. Enki was the god of wisdom. And he was the merciful, good one, the way they painted it. And they played off each other. It was good cop, bad cop. But when you read their account, Enlil wanted to create mankind as worker bees. We were the dumb slaves. We were just supposed to be smart enough to dig the ditches and make the rivers streams and the temples for them, and that's it. Well, in their story, Enki is the one that created us with the help of Nama.
Ooh.
Yes. So they genetically manipulate the gene pool, make humanity smarter, and give them wisdom. And so he is portrayed as the benefactor of mankind. He wanted to save us. Well, by giving us this knowledge, we started building and making a lot of noise that was upsetting the gods. And Enlil couldn't sleep. The noise we were making was getting on his nerves. So he decided he's going to kill us all with a flood. Well, what does Enki do? He comes down and warns this guy named Atrahasis and instructs him to build a boat and to grab two of every animal and save mankind. Man, that sounds familiar.
It sure does.
Enki is Satan, is Lucifer. But in this twisted story, he's the good guy. He's the savior. And then when you go into the Greek, you have this same figure, but his name is Prometheus. And he's the bringer of the fire, the not symbolic for the knowledge. And I've had some people attack me, like, you know what your show's named after? I mean, come on, guys. You don't think I didn't study and knew what I was naming my show? No, the Prometheus perspective is so you're not deceived. Number one rule of war, we talk about it all the time. Know thy enemy. If you have the Prometheus perspective, you see the truth. You see the deception and the lies. And Jesus himself said he was the ruler of this world. And what does Satan say? Bend the knee. I'll give you all the kingdoms of the world. They're mine to give to whom I please. Mm-hmm. He's the one pulling the strings. And we've been deceived. We have to be good Bereans.
I want to continue to piggyback off that because you brought that up, and I don't think everybody understands the significance of the name Nema, right? Nema, which actually meant beautiful.
Beautiful and calmly, yeah.
If I go to Genesis 4:19, it says, and Lamech took two wives. The name of one was Ada, the other one Zillah. Ada bore Jabal. He was the father of those who dwell in tents and have livestock. His brother's name was Jubal. He was the father of those who play the lyre and the pipe. Zillah also bore Tubal-Cain, who was the forger of all instruments, bronze and iron. The sister of Tubal-Cain was Nama. Now, once again, I have to always put this in there, but in the Bible, when they say a woman's name, it's important.
Especially in the genealogies.
And in the New Old Testament, especially. It was a very male-centric society. But when you throw in the fact that his sister, because I highly doubt that was his only sister. Most of these people were having kids right and left like it was going out of style. But they bring up the name Nema, beautiful and calmly. And you just said that his name, or that his wife's name was Nema. We've talked to Ryan Peterson about this and talking about this being initially potentially the father of, I'm sorry, the mother of all of the initial Nephilim.
In the book that we just read, the passage out of Enoch, what did it say? The women that defiled themselves with the watchers became sirens. Well, what is sirens? They're half bird, half women. Half fish, half women.
In Greek mythology.
Could Nema be the siren that was changed to what we know now as Lilith?
That just hurt my brain a little bit. To keep going on this same point, though, look back at what it says that his kids did, right? When we're talking about Lamech, it said Jabal, he was the father of those who dwell in tents and have livestock. He's the father of nomadic living. He just figured this out, apparently. And then his brother's name was Jubal. He was the father of all those who play the lyre and the pipe, music. Do you think he just picked up a stick and started blowing on it, and then all of a sudden that happened?
True.
And then this one is one that I think is super important. It says, and not that they aren't all important, but Zillah also bore Tubal-Cain. He was the forger of all instruments of iron and bronze.
That's blacksmithing.
That's blacksmithing. Now, if we go through these genealogies, or not genealogies, if we go through these pantheons, we'll see that every pantheon has like a blacksmithing god, one that forges these tools and gives these down. Hephaestus is the one for Greek.
And he was a Greek titan.
Exactly. And we see this come down, and it's exactly what, hold on, go back to prior to the flood. What did Azazel teach? The working of metals.
Yeah.
The forging of weapons.
You even have that in like the Thor movies.
Oh, it gets even better for that. Don't you worry. We're going to get to some crazy stuff with that. But you go through this and you'll see So many similarities in all these different things. But if we go back, I think it's interesting, and this is the point that Ryan Peterson brought up that I 100% agree with. The reason they bring up Nema and they show that all of her brothers all of a sudden had this knowledge was a trading of human women for that knowledge. And when we look through the book of Enoch, it talks about all the things that they taught men and that they took women, the women that they so chose as their wives. To me, that seems like a trade-off.
Yeah, and all the things listed there in Genesis are fallen watcher teachings, according to the book of Enoch.
Exactly.
It was a dowry.
Yeah.
So we see that happen. Now, if we look at a lot of these, so if we can look at these gods what you want to call it, these watchers at that time, and this stuff, and we just kind of established that we think there's a second incursion, right? We've established that we believe that based on what we've learned from the Bible, what we've learned from First Enoch, and what we see in these other sources, that these things, the same type of things, the same teachings, the same ideas came from these beings. And we said it before. If the whole point of coming down, you know, it's the idea of Satan to corrupt mankind. Right, we talk about the Genesis 3:15 narrative. Satan, there's always a war between that evil supernatural side and humanity. When all this happened with the watchers, and in the Bible, it's in like Genesis 6, and there's like a 9-verse stretch, and all of a sudden everybody has to die just that fast in the Bible. We see this. Something bad obviously happened. Now, we know those watchers were bound in chains, but we've established that second incursion there. But now if we look at these pantheons from these other religions, you brought up Hephaestus from the Greek mythology as a blacksmith. We're seeing this same ideology. You would think that when all this bad stuff happened and everybody died as a result of the flood, that Satan's like, yes, you know, all but 8 people in the world, God's creation, you know, 8 people and 2 of every animal, except for 7 of every clean animal, were destroyed. Like Satan's like, chalk one up for me. Chalk one up for me. That's a big win.
Killed everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The ark makes it through and we have what happens after, but it worked once. Why not try it again? It worked once. Why would we change our strategy? You know, what does it say in the Bible? Nothing new is under the sun. We see this. So when we look at it and we go down and we look at, once again, if we look at what those watchers in the initial teachings that they had when they came down, we see ones like Shamsiel. He taught the signs of the sun. Helios was a sun god. Every, you know, Ra for Egypt was a sun god. Every pantheon has a sun god. There's a focus on the sun. Sariel taught the course of the moon. There is a moon god, or and some, it's just called moon. Mm. Actually, I think it's in the, hold on, let me find this. I think it's very interesting that it's broken down that way, but in the,
You had goddesses too. And then like the Egyptian, it was Sin. And what did they do when they went out into the wilderness from Exodus? They went into the wilderness of Sin. Remember we talked to Derek Gilbert, how it gave the dates and the times. You know, this was during a full moon. So they were entering the realm of the goddess or god Sin. When they was in full power, when they walked up on Jericho. Mm. You remember that? And the whole walking around the wall 7 times, that was a ritual that they would do for the moon god, which was also a fertility god, to protect the city and bless the crops. So they were trapped inside, couldn't do the ritual. So God had his people do their ritual and mimic them. And basically make fun of them.
Mock them.
Yeah, and then blew the trumpets and crashed the walls down. You talk about some spiritual warfare and a battle of the gods there.
And if I'm not mistaken, I believe it was like right after harvest time too.
Well, yeah, so I was saying, yeah.
That time of year. Which I watched a pretty cool show. I can't remember what it's called. It's on YouTube there. It's a Christian guy over in Israel, and he found Jericho, he thinks, and he even said that there was pots that still had grain in it that was burnt on top. Where he told them not to take anything.
Mm. I've actually found different accounts of that too. That people said they found that over there.
I thought that was pretty cool. And he said the way the walls fell. You could just walk up and over them, where they built their towns, like on a berm, just built on top and on top.
Yeah, and at one site they found how they said that they fell from the, like they were pushed out instead of in.
Right. Yeah, the walls fell outwards,
and that all the walls were destroyed except there was one column that, on that. I think was it the east end or whatever end that Rahab was in.
Right, and
because she was under the protection
standing-ish
of Yahweh. For helping his people.
Right.
That would be pretty crazy just to see that.
I think it'd be cool to go over there, but I don't think I'm leaving the country anytime soon.
Yeah. You're scared to go to the store sometimes.
Derek and Sharon's over there right now.
Yeah. I've been watching. I've been following them and looking at the pictures and things. Derek, that's just so cool. They're actually doing a show with, I think, Mike, talking about is it safe to go to Israel. I think they're airing that tonight. And obviously the answer they're going to say is yes, I think, by them being over there. But pretty interesting when you look at it.
Just sidebar on that. We watched Granger Smith. He was a country singer, and he's quit singing and started doing more preaching kind of stuff. And they went over there, and they said they just do like a little podcast, like a, I don't know, their life YouTube channel, whatever. They went up to ask for tours and shocked the ladies that were working it, you know, working the ticket sales. You want to go? You want to go? They're like, yeah, we're here, ain't we?
We figure with all the chaos going on that the tickets would be cheap.
The lines were short. She said something like, I don't know, like they ain't had no sales in like 3 weeks or something. That was a little sidebar.
Well, I want to keep going on this Pantheon trek as we've been going a little bit, and I'm jumping around. I have way too many notes, and it's killing me. I tried to type them all today, and I did not have time. So half of them are typed, half of them are printed out in my handwriting. For anybody out there, it looks like Sanskrit.
Doctor writing.
It's and I'm not a doctor, so I don't have any right to write like this. But if we want to look at some of the things that I think that we really need to focus on is that we see, and I think we've brought this up with the ayahuasca. We've brought this up with the DMT stuff. Did we talk about that on this, or did we talk about that prior?
That was prior.
Yeah, that was pre-roll.
So we should have recorded all that because it was really good stuff. But I think it's important to see that when we go through the original Watchers, Semjaza taught the cutting of roots and casting spells. If we look through some of these different cultures, I mean, we'll look at Asclepius, for example, in the Greek and Roman pantheons. You know, he was the god of medicine. Where do these people get these things? You know, where
which
we get the
Greek
idea?
Which in Greek is pharmakia.
Well,
which
that's a
the
whole
Old
nother,
Testament warns you about.
That's a whole nother road to go down. The pharmakia road. We could do a whole show on just that.
And he carried a staff with two serpents, male and female, twisting up it.
To Asherah pole.
And how did they know back then what a DNA strand looked like? I mean, Hermes, the messenger god of the pantheon of the divine council, according to the Greeks, had his staff. What do they call that? I can't remember now. But it was a staff with wings on the top and two twisting serpents going up it. Also,
he had wings and his sandals as well.
Yeah.
But I think, so there's so many other ones. If you look at the Yanomami, which is, if we go down, we're looking at different myths from different parts of the world. I think it's important we see that these things stretch everywhere. So the Yanomami was a South American myth. And there was, they have different names, and there's some of them are very similar. Like the sun god was just sun, and the sun protected man. Moon ate man. The sun protected the men from moon because the moon would eat humankind. If you look at...
did you say eight as in number eight, man?
No, like eight as in they were hungry. The moon was hungry. So you look at... And this is another... There's two things here I think are important that we see. Red boa. We're talking about a massive snake connected the sun, moon, and earth together. But the snake could sometimes turn into a man. Kind of interesting.
Like the Midgard serpent of Norse mythology that bit his own tail and held, you know, the waters of the earth in.
I have that name written down somewhere.
Yeah, it's a big name.
It is a big name. But I know I have it somewhere.
Like big is in all capitalized?
But gigantic.
Tiamat, going back to the Apkallu and Mesopotamian myth and stuff. That's the Babylonian creation epic. You know, Tiamat was the mother of all living. She created the first gods, and that's the same story. She created the first set of gods, and the next offspring gods that she created were too loud and rebellious. So then the younger set of sons tried to overthrow the older gods, and they do. They kill their father and set up their own divine council. Same kinda story.
Sounds like we just talked about that.
Yeah.
It's just kind of...
Same story.
It's written so many different places. It
comes from an ancient source. That's why.
Look, and I go further back to the Asclepius and the for the Yanomami, it was just deer, and deer was the first shaman who invented ritual chanting and the snuff that the shamans would use to see the spirit world. I mean, we see the same thing that we saw with Semjaza. We're talking about the cutting of roots. We're talking about, you know, making them familiar with plants. They knew what plants were.
Yeah, and like we were talking about with the ayahuasca, their tradition is that the gods came down and told them how to make ayahuasca. And when you look at it, you know, most people think that ayahuasca is, you know, a plant. Ayahuasca refers to a brew or a drink. It's a mixture of different things. And the main ingredient that's loaded down with DMT, if you take it alone, you can't get high on it. And in certain doses, it's lethal. There's only one plant in this entire world that when it's mixed with this other plant, it can give you the hallucinogenic effects and kill the poisons that would kill you otherwise.
That'd be a lot of trial and error.
Yeah. So I mean,
figure it out on your own.
And the thing is, too, is there's a process. You have to cook and boil it. You know, and there's all these different processes that these plants have to go through before it's ingested. You know, how did these people just figure this out? Like you said, did they just go through and through the millions and millions of different, you know, plant life and species, just trial and error, put them together and see what happens?
What would even give them the thought to do that?
Yeah, I mean, it was given to them.
Going on that same run, if you look at the Aztec myths, it was Patecatl was the god of medicine, mixed herbs, and known for getting drunk. Like, same kind of thing. We're talking about this exactly. If you go into
Dionysus.
The Yoruba, it's an African myth, mostly from the Nigerian side. From that side of Africa, you have the Osanyin. It was the Orisha of medicine. He was a gardener, cultivated leaves and herbs for healing and rituals. If you look at the Native American myths, In the Ojibwe belief system, Bear was the keeper of the secrets of healing and medicine. You're seeing a very, very, like, a very straight line here. This is going across the world. I mean, we just went from Mexico to Africa to Native America, all talking about something that's very similar, a god that taught them the different ways to use roots, medicines, things of this nature.
And the Native Americans, they said that the gods came down and civilized them and taught them all these things, and they called them the Star People.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you read the Sumerian Kings List, the very first line of it, it says, when the kingship descended from heaven, and it talks about these guys ruling for thousands of years. I mean,
this keeps going.
Yeah.
In Japanese myth, Okuninushi was the god of medicine and magic, which is exactly what Semjaza was, casting spells and the cutting of roots. This is exactly what it was. You can just keep on going on this path and just keep seeing this in so many different religions.
Yeah, and that's why God warned his people, do not seek out mediums and to sacrifice to these goat demons, it talks about in Exodus. Because these things were happening. It was fallen angel teachings and witchcraft.
On that same thing, in Irish myth, Bairog, was a Druidist Celtic priest who was a sage and a healer. Same thing. We're seeing that again. You're seeing this is going, spanning across the world. We're seeing this in everywhere. We could do this with all those different gods. We can go through the blacksmithing gods, the ones that taught the working of metals and things like this. They've brought this information, this knowledge. There's so many different things here. And the part that I think is awesome, and the part that I think lends so much credence to the Bible and lends credence to First Enoch, is every one of these tribes and these different places have giant myths. Whether it's the Cyclops, whether it's just there's two giants, actually, and I'm trying to remember what nation that was, because it was a little gruesome. But hold on, I got it right here somewhere.
The one-eyed purple people eater.
No, there was son of a gun. I got to find
Cut
a better
that
way.
Out. This is a Christian podcast.
In Native American myth. In Native American myth. Sedna was an Inuit. It was two giants that had a baby. And it was a baby girl, and all she wanted to do was eat meat. Her parents hunted caribou, moose, birds, and one day she even ate a polar bear. It got to the point that she tried to eat her parents. So her parents took her out in a boat and threw her in the ocean. But she grabbed onto the side. And when she was on the side, her parents cut her fingers off one at a time until she fell into the ocean. And that's where she lives to this day, according to their myth. So there, the giant myths, the Cyclops, like in, which I think the Cyclops stuff is so cool. Cause if you see that in, I'll have to edit so much of this out. It's going to be awful.
The Cyclops is were in your Greek mythology a lot, and they were aligned with being the great builders and architects of these megalithic sites.
The Cyclopean architecture.
Yes.
But Irish myth, I found it now. Irish myth, Balor was the strongest of the Fomorians. He had one eye and could defeat armies with a single look. So you see the Cyclops here too. This is an Irish myth. We're not just seeing it in one part of the world, but you're seeing these giants pop up everywhere. And, you know, we hear about it in our fee-fi-fo-fum, in our fairy tales that we hear, you know, the nighttime stories, the bedtime stories. Giants were everywhere. This is something that is not where does this myth come from? And how does every nation across the world in their ancient mythology, before they should ever have met each other, have the same myths? How does that happen? I mean, I think that we plainly see that this myth is all founded back to the Bible. This all starts at creation, because every one of these mythologies from all these different nations, from all these different places, all have a creator God. Sometimes it's two, but they all have someone who brought them into creation. There was one I saw that actually his younger brother did it because the other one was too drunk to do it. Like, I mean, there's so many unique things that have happened in this, that this telephone game over time, and the corruption that some of these unseen principalities have put on this. But it's everywhere. This is the same story retold with just mutations put to it. And you see these supernatural things, and we look at them, and we look at this stuff, say, oh, that's, you know, that can't be real. There's not these, you know, mermaids or whatever they are, God, you know, goddess of fertility and healing and all these different things. We say that that's not a real thing. But look at the Bible. Look what it clearly tells us. How do these people, how do the Israelites, every time in the Exodus, fall away every 5 minutes? How do we see that the Israelites, you know, fell into these other religions? I firmly believe, you know, there's actually a passage that talks about when Jesus came into Nazareth in his hometown, right? And it says he did few works there because of the lack of faith. I believe a lot of things have happened in our change, in our history. If we go back to a supernatural world, people were expecting supernatural things. People had faith in those supernatural things, whether that was God or whether that was one of these other deities. And if you think about it, we still hear amazing missionary stories and things from other countries that we just don't see here. And I truly think that's because of the lack of our faith in this country. I truly do. My dad read me a story one time about a small African village that had, I can't remember how many people were there, 50 people, 100 people. It was a really small African village. And a neighboring village was coming and told them that they were going to come and wipe them out. And this village has a couple thousand people compared to their 100. And this village comes against the 100 and comes to circle it. There's a missionary with this. This is how the story got out. There's a missionary with this 100. And once again, I'm skewing the numbers because I don't remember the actual numbers. But this massive army comes against this 100 with this missionary there. And they stop right when they get around the village. And everybody's like, what's going on in the village? The chief of this gigantic, you know, this larger tribe that's coming to take over them walks down, drops his weapons in front of the chief of the smaller village and bows down to him and says, we surrender. And the chief's like, what? They say, you don't see him? And they told him there were angels all around them. That missionary had brought Jesus, had brought Christ to that, and he was saving that nation, saving that small group of people because they had faith. This is stuff that we don't see in our country right now because of our lack of faith. But if you go back in history, everybody believed in a supernatural world. The Israelites, the Hebrews, the people that we found our entire belief system on believed in a supernatural world.
We'll see 2 Kings chapter 3, verse 27 talks about the king of Moab. The Israelites were going to war against them, and they were winning the battle. And what does he do? He takes his eldest son, the one that was... It was his eldest son and only son. It was supposed to be the one that was going to continue his name, his family name and the legacy, and take over the kingship. Chained him to the wall of the city and sacrificed him and burned him alive. And it says in that account that suddenly the tides changed and the Moabites started slaying the Israelites on the battlefield. And then that the Israelites in fear turned and ran and lost the battle. So, this king of Moab knew these other gods and knew their power and gave up his son and won the battle. This other god, lowercase g god, intervened for him.
This most likely could have been Baal of Peor or Chemosh were the two main gods around that time in Moab. Like, these are biblical. Like, Chemosh is talked about in Jeremiah 48. Baal of Peor is talked about in Numbers 25. We see these gods.
That's what Psalm 91 is talking about, Chemosh. A lot of people read that. It talks about, you'll have no fear of the pestilence and the terror that comes by night. He's one of those mentioned by name.
I think this is where we as a Christian community, as a church fearing, God fearing people, are losing the battle. If you don't realize that you're in a supernatural spiritual battle, the Ephesians 6:12, if you don't see that, then you're already losing. If you don't see that you're under attack, if you don't see that the stuff's all around you, then you're already losing.
And you see how bad your theology is and how stupid you look to non-believers. Because if we say, there's only one God and Christ, is ruling over the nations and all this stuff, then it's like, and I'm sorry for my French, so if there's children in the room, cover their ears. Why is this world so much shit? This world is. It's shit. So if what you're saying is true with that theology, you are saying that Christ and God is a shitty ruler. That is not true. You are missing the supernatural Deuteronomy 32 worldview. And that is the answer. When you have these atheists and non-believers come up to you, say, your God's a God of love and this, that, and the other. Well, how come my little sister was raped from the time she was 6 years old all the way till she was 18 and then committed suicide because your God didn't intervene? What about abortion? What about this, that, and the other? And just start throwing out all these atrocities and bad things that's happening in the world. Where's your God? He was busy. Or it was the devil. That wasn't God. That was the devil. I'm sorry. The devil can't be your catch-all to put all your blames on. Number one, we are responsible for the decisions we make. We are imagers of God, and we're to have rule over this place and dominion and rule as he would rule. But as Paul said, we traded the truth for a lie. And we worship the created things instead of the creator. Well, what are those created things? They are the fallen sons of God. From Deuteronomy 32, it says, "Lest you turn and worship the stars of heaven." Who are those stars of heaven? We've done talked about that.
Yeah.
That's these sons of God. They are still ruling over the nations. But we have a hope now. But what did Christ say? My kingdom is not of this world. So it is your duty to revoke your green card, your citizenship over the principality that's ruling over your nation and your people, and apply for his kingdom. Just because there's somebody with, hair down to their butt and a beard down to their belly button, you can't say, well, there is no barbers. Barbers don't exist, because if they did, why has this guy got hair down to his butt and a beard down to his belly button? If there was barbers, you wouldn't have people like that. No, your theology is screwed up. Barbers exist. Just because there's scraggly-looking people doesn't mean that barbers do not exist. That just means that scraggly-looking guy didn't go to the table and sit down in the chair and get his hair cut. And that's the problem with the world today. We're not going to the King of Kings and Lord of Lords and revoking our membership to these wicked nations and rulers and principalities. That part is on us.
I think that's extremely well said. I 100% agree with you. I mean, 100%. That's the world right now is not bad because of God. It's bad because of sin. It's bad because of the choices we make. But in the same way, evil is in this world. And like you said, when people blame it on the devil, Satan, the devil, whatever you want to call it, whatever it is, anything other than God is not omnipresent. It's in one place at one time. Whatever demon it is in one place at one time. It is not something that, you know, there's not another deity that's omnipresent that's above all of us. There's just not. So that doesn't mean that we're not under attack, because we always are. And I think that it's never been, I think that people laugh at it, but when you look back at those old cartoons and you have the angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other, you have a choice to make. It's free will.
It's not far from it.
Yeah. I think that's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
And when you choose, you know what? This is what feels good. I'm going to do that. This is what, you know, makes me happy. I'm going to do that. This is what the world's telling me right now. I'm going to do that. That's when the world gets to where we are right now. And that's when we turn to those other gods, whether we see them as Chemosh or whether we see them as this feels good today. I don't care. It's the same thing. You're worshiping the same gods.
Be small as the screw tape letters. It's the little moves on the board that make big ripples.
The butterfly effect. 100%. We could go down this rabbit trail on each of these gods, and we could go down, and at some point we probably will go into more depth on a couple different things and different pantheons, because we did just truly scratch the absolute surface of this tonight. I mean, the absolute surface.
But hopefully we connected some dots and gave you a good 30,000-foot view, and maybe you can see things a little broader with a little bit better perspective with the conversation we just had. That's the hope, because, yeah, we could go down through and tit for tat, mm-hmm. and name the gods, what their characteristics were, and make linear lines and connect them to every nation in the world. I know we could do that, but I don't think we have to do that. I think it'd be an interesting deep dive for the future, but for our purpose today was just to show, hey, Deuteronomy 32 is real. And hey, you see it here, 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 and here throughout the world. Regardless of what you think or you believe, it's real. And you need to be familiar with it and see it.
And if you don't believe that it's real, as you're saying, there's only one God. I mean, there's obviously only one true God, but it sets yourself up to be deceived easily. Well, I got this feeling, or something just popped into my head. It had to be God that told me.
Or if you use certain substances to see in the spirit realm.
Yeah.
And then something tells you.
It's something else. Who might.
You don't need.
Pose as God. But if you can't use your discernment. And I mean, all you got to do is use the Bible. He tells you everything. How to live your life. And if whatever thought or vision you see goes against it, then obviously it's not from God. And you can we've seen it with friends of ours. It's very easy to get deceived, and then once you're deceived, I mean, that ripple goes far.
I think broad strokes here, we need to truly, every one of us needs to look at our Bible, needs to read that as truth. Because when we listen to different ideas, different sects of Christianity or whatever that will tell us certain things, the Bible warns not to believe the doctrines of men. It warns that.
Yeah.
Multiple times it warns that. We need to make sure that we're reading our Bible, being versed in our Bible, understanding what our Bible says. If it's weird, it's important. If it's something that we need to, if it's in the Bible, we need to understand. We need to try to dive in and understand what it's trying to tell us. We'll never understand everything, but God can give you discernment when you read that Bible, and it makes all the difference in the world. And it's so important. that you look at those things, because the minute you put your Bible, that's actually from that, the tacky one. I think it was, not the original Left Behind series. I think it was the one they did after. The original ones were terrifying. I almost pee myself when you'd watch those. They were terrifying. But they did another one after, and there's a guy that goes in a house, and he's running away, and he's running from somebody. And on the table, there's a gun and a Bible. And the guy grabs the gun and runs out of the house, and Satan walks in and goes, good, he's totally unarmed. And that's so true.
Yep.
Well, everybody, we appreciate you listening on another deep dive, deep dig with us. And in the meantime,
keep digging. Boom.
Thanks for listening to the Dig Bible Podcast. All you dirty fingernail theologians, we appreciate you. Be sure to check out our YouTube, our Instagram, our Facebook, and our Twitter accounts. Be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. And wherever you listen to us, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, be sure to give us a rating. That really helps us jump up so other people can find us. Keep digging.